And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, here we are on a Friday. Dialing it up. Chris Brown along with Matty Glab as Steve got an early start to his weekend. Good to have you here, Matty. Thanks for helping us out today. And I do have to start off by asking you, were there any Cinco de Mayo festivities in your plans last night?
You know what? There were not any Cinco de Mayo plans. Instead, I went to the Buffalo Prep Academy graduation. The Bills and the Sabres have done a lot of things for Buffalo Prep over the last year or so, I want to say. And I know a lot of our players have helped out with Buffalo Prep in a lot of different ways. It's a really cool organization that helps children in underserved communities, make sure they're on the right track for high school and college. And so they had 60 kids graduating from their program last night, and all 60, as a part of the graduation ceremony, came up on stage, said where they were graduating from, what high school, and then said where they were going to college and explained what they were going to major in. And so many of them had like full ride scholarships lined up, A lot of them were going to super cool schools, a lot of them staying local. So it was a really fun celebration. So cool to be a part of it. Such a cool organization that does great work in Buffalo. So that's what I did for Cinco de Mayo.
All right. So you're out doing good deeds, and I'm out here trying to pick up a Mexican dinner. Well, I just got to say, apparently everybody in Western New York had the same idea that
I
did.
It's hard to get food at a Mexican restaurant on Cinco de Mayo in Buffalo.
Yeah, I'm never doing it again.
Mm-hmm. I tried it
never
once,
doing
too.
It again.
I learned my lesson.
And it's not anything against those fine establishments, you know, that make the Mexican food. I'm not knocking them at all. But I knew going in, because my wife and I, we talked about it like a day out, and I'm like, we're not getting a reservation.
Yeah.
Why don't we just order out?
So take out, then you can.
So that's what
make
that
some
was our plan.
At home, you know.
So that was our plan, and so you know, I order on the app and whatever, and you know, they say, you know, 25 to 30 minutes. Okay, fine. I'm like 15 minutes from the place by car anyway. So I figure I'll stop, get a little Mexican beer at the grocery store on my way there. By that time, you know, whatever. I get to this place. The parking lot is part of a strip mall. So there's like hundreds of spots. There are no spots in the parking lot. There are two pop-up tents outside the restaurant.
Oh my gosh.
With a live band, and they're serving alcohol. And like, if you don't want to wait an hour and 45 minutes to be seated,
eat your food
inside,
outside.
They were offering just tacos outside. Like, if you want something to eat, we can make you a taco out here, but that's about it. It was like Mardi Gras. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable. And then I walk in the place, and I you walk into these places when they're mobbed like this, you feel terrible for the wait staff.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever had a restaurant job of any kind, and I had one for a summer or so, you gain a whole new respect for people that work in the restaurant business.
Yeah.
Because that is just grinding. You're grinding every day. And when it's busy, your head is just spinning.
Mm-hmm.
So I walk in, and I might as well have jumped into a tornado. Like, it was insane. But they did a good job. I got my stuff. You know, I only stood there for about 10, 15 minutes.
Oh, that's not bad.
They found my order, brought it out, and I was out of there in a flash because that place – and I don't know what it is, but it's like – my son was joking with me about it. He goes, I think there's more people who are not of Mexican descent that celebrate Cinco de Mayo harder than people of actual Mexican descent.
Mm-hmm.
It is a full-on adopted holiday in this country. I think it's just in large part because people love Mexican food mostly. And I couldn't believe it. And I had called two other places that I know and that I like and I frequent, jammed. Like, forget it. Forget it. So I'm picking another day besides the 5th of May to go get Mexican food in the future. That is the last time I am doing that because it was bananas. Like, People were going crazy. It was like it was New Year's or something. I was like, what is going on?
Who doesn't
love... I know it was a little bit nicer yesterday weather-wise. People are anxious to get out.
Who doesn't love a margarita and some chips and salsa right when the weather is getting warm? It's an excuse to get outside, an excuse to have some amazing food. I love Mexican food.
They were taking full advantage. Just about everybody that I drove by, it was bananas, absolutely bananas. So I'm going to sit that one out next year for sure. NFL news and notes, and first thing on the docket here, another first-round pick is signed. Adam Schefter was reporting that the Chiefs reached an agreement with their first-round pick, George Karlaftis, the pass rusher out of Purdue, who went 30th overall to Kansas City. 4 year, another fully guaranteed deal, as it looks like every first-round pick is going to have a fully guaranteed contract. It wasn't always that way, but apparently it is now. So another guy signed from the first round. Knowing that Kaiir Elam was the 23rd pick, he's been in close proximity to some of these other guys that have signed, like Devontae Wyatt. I also know Jordan. I think Jordan Davis is the highest draft choice that has signed, I believe. Yes, he was 13th pick overall to the Eagles. So he has signed. That's my fault. I left my phone on.
Good morning.
Yeah, fine for me.
I'm awake now.
So, yes, you're welcome. So I think in due course here, you know, I would expect Kaiir to be signed. I'm not saying he's necessarily going to be signed before rookie minicamp starts at the end of next week, but he could be. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility with the frequency over these last 2 days that we've seen some first-round pick signing. We're not talking the back of the draft here. We're talking the guys at the front.
Yeah, and I know what we have done from an organizational standpoint is usually we publicly release that stuff once the guys are here for rookie minicamp. If I can remember when we were kind of writing everything up last year, it was around rookie minicamp when a bulk of those guys signed and we made it official on our website.
Yeah, so good chance that it does happen. And, you know, one less thing for the players to worry about so they can just go out there and play football. Because it does weigh on their minds, having talked to them over the years. Did you see the Robert Griffin III tweets about the Hollywood Brown trade yesterday? He, like, ripped off four tweets in a row, like, hey, look, I was, like, the third-string quarterback in Baltimore. Let me tell you what's what here with Marquise Brown's decision to ask for a trade out of Baltimore and go to Arizona. So he basically says, throwing the ball more, or Marquise Brown wanted out of Baltimore because Greg Roman, not Lamar Jackson. Marquise knows G-Rose system runs through the backs and the tight end, so it's unlikely a wide receiver one will get big money because he's just not going to have the production. Mm-hmm. So I get that. The best way to get paid is to be in a pass-first offense. Throwing the ball more is not the proven recipe for success for the Ravens. And then he goes into all these stats and everything. But the bottom line, he says, is Arizona gives Hollywood Brown an opportunity to be a star in a system that he knows from his college days because he played, you know, in the same system in college with Kyler Murray, who's like his best friend in football. And I get the logic. I totally get it. I don't know that he had to spell all that out. But I guess, you know, he's trying to increase his exposure as an NFL analyst. That's fine. And he's right because in Baltimore, as a receiver, it's going to be very hard to flourish. I mean, Mark Andrews, the tight end, is clearly the number one passing target in that system. And after that, you know, you're talking, they throw to the backs a good amount. And we also know they run the ball a lot. I mean, they're almost 50-50 run to pass down there. They're kind of an outlier from where the rest of the league is going. I got to believe, though, if and when the Ravens are fortunate enough to have, like, a true number one guy, whether it's Rashad Bateman, their top pick from last year, or somebody, it's going to be hard to keep that guy if the offense stays the same, don't you think?
Yeah, it definitely will be. And you look at these offensive coordinators and in the offense that you put in within the system that you're playing for, and one thing that I've and our players really appreciate with the Bills is they make a system for their players' strengths. So if you look at the Ravens offense, yes, their strength is running the ball, but at some point, if you have a wide receiver like Hollywood Brown or like Bateman, you would want to play to their strengths because then you're throwing a defense off if you're able to win those one-on-one matchups, which is what the game is all about when you're talking about your skill players. So that'll be interesting to see how that situation unfolds. And I mean, in the future, what the Ravens are going to look like for the next couple seasons. Do they stay that way? Is it too spelled out for opposing defenses to where they know what to expect when they're going to face the Ravens?
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is philosophically, how does this decision by Hollywood Brown impact how they go forward as an offense? They might, and I'm not going to pretend that we know what the nature of the conversation was between Hollywood Brown and his agent and the Ravens, but at some point in time, he probably said something to the effect of, hey, look, I just can't maximize my production here. I got to go somewhere else. And so what are the Ravens saying now? Are they saying, well, it's just one guy who wasn't happy here with his role in the offense. We're moving on and, you know, keep on keeping on. Or do they say, well, look, we work really hard to acquire players like that to add to our team. Do we have to cater more to the strengths of receiving talent when we bring good ones in to avoid losing them in the future when their rookie contract's up? I don't know if they go that far. It's going to be very interesting to see how they handle that situation with receivers going forward. Because I got to tell you, a receiver right off the bat is very dependent on a lot of other people to be productive. Obviously the quarterback, but the offensive line has to protect to give the quarterback enough time to throw. You know, and then there's a pecking order on every receiving depth chart on every team. So you know how many targets you're going to get. If you're not the number one guy, I'm probably looking at 5 or 6 targets in a game. I got to maximize this, et cetera, et cetera. In Baltimore, you can't say that. I wonder how receivers feel out there. Is Hollywood Brown alone, or are these guys going to be like, well, I'm just going to run my 40 routes. I might get 2 balls thrown to me today, but I guess I'm just going to do my job. I know it gets a bad rap as a diva position. I just wonder how receivers are going to feel in the future going there. Because this was, let's not make a mistake, and let's not deny this. This trade happened during the first round of the draft, highly publicized out there for everybody to see. And now, you know, we kind of in the wake of it a week later see Hollywood Brown wanted to go somewhere where he could actually catch the football.
Exactly. And it's also interesting, too, because if that's your offense, if that's what you're going to live by and die by on the Ravens is like, hey, our offense is going to mainly be running the ball. And if you come here and you're a wide receiver, you necessarily may not get the touches that you want to get, the balls thrown to you that you want to get. So from a perspective of that, why would you want to draft or add players like that when you know they may not be featured in the type of offense that you're playing? And it's, I feel like this is a deeper conversation, you know, within the NFL and within different, like, offenses that you do run, because you could flip it to Buffalo and look at the offense that we play and look at the running backs that we have on our roster. And do we ever think that Brandon Bean or Sean McDermott would add a player like Derrick Henry, who is a feature back who is going to get 15 to 20 carries a game? Would that ever work in Buffalo? Would they ever add a player like that? Or will the Buffalo Bills continue to know what they are and draft players who fit within that type of system?
Yeah, and it begs the question, like, what do they believe Lamar Jackson is?
Yeah.
Like, do they run the football and target the tight ends in the passing game because they know that Lamar can consistently make the easier, shorter distance throws? You know, to guys like, I mean, he throws down the seam to Mark Andrews, and sometimes they're 20-yard passes. But he's very good between the numbers. The knock on Lamar is he has trouble throwing outside the numbers, which is where the receivers usually are on their route running. So is this a reflection? Is the offense a reflection of what Lamar maybe not be so good at? Or is it something else in terms of Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator, and what he wants to do? I'm sure it's somewhere in the middle there, but it's going to be very compelling to see where it goes, because at the same time, if you look at it from a team perspective, Maddie, I mean, this isn't all that different from Tennessee. I mean, Tennessee with Derrick Henry, he's going to run the ball 20 to 25 times a game. And so when A.J. Brown comes to them with his hands out and says, I want to get paid, I would have been happy with, you know, he said publicly he would have been happy with $22 million a year, and claims that the Titans only offered him 16. Well, why did they only offer him 16, if in fact that is true? It's because they don't need to pay a receiver $22 million a year in that offense because they don't throw it enough. So why would you pay a guy $20-something million dollars at receiver? Get rid of him, bring in a rookie, and put him on a rookie contract, cost control, because they're just not throwing the ball enough to justify having a $23, $24 million a year receiver. And I think the Ravens are in the same boat. Mm-hmm. So they said, okay, you're not happy, move on, because we're not paying you.
Definitely. And then another part of this also is looking at the wide receiver market and where it's at right now. Like, what is the ceiling for this? Because Hollywood Brown was a third round pick, and A.J. Brown gets paid. And look at all these other wide receivers who have gotten paid this offseason, including Stephon Diggs. What's the top of this? When is it going to end? When is it going to shift? When is it going to change? Because the money that's out there for wide receivers and what they're being valued at in terms of trading within an NFL draft, a first-round pick, how does this evolve within the next couple of seasons?
I think it's going to play out similar to the way the cornerback position played out for a while. And what I mean by that is, so Tyreek Hill gets traded because the Dolphins are fully willing to pay a king's ransom to add Tyreek Hill to their offense. Before he signed, I think the top of the market was DeAndre Hopkins, and he was somewhere around 22-something million dollars, average annual value on his contract. And then Tyreek signs for 30 a year. Well, that blows the roof off of the market at the wide receiver position. It totally resets everything, and that's why there were a lot of receivers with their hands out saying, oh, we got to fix this. Some were more successful than others and obviously getting what they felt they deserved. It's a lot like the cornerback market was about 5 or 6 years ago. So the Carolina Panthers had franchised Josh Norman, made him their franchise player, and then they rescinded the tag. And right after they did, Washington signs him to a contract for $15 million a year, which was like $3 or $4 million per year average over what the top guy was getting at the time. And it blew the market up, maybe not to this degree. And people are like, oh, my gosh, corners are going to outprice themselves in the market. But what happened was the market kind of settled out. And I think it was like at least two off seasons before anybody eclipsed the Josh Norman contract at $15 million a year. Now, could somebody eclipse Tyreek Hill's $30 million a year in the next two seasons? Sure, it could happen. But a lot of the big-name guys either got extensions or got new deals. You know, we're talking Davante Adams, Stephon Diggs. All these guys got new deals that are sitting at the top there. And even the other ones that are sitting at the top, like DeAndre Hopkins, he's already 30. And so I don't know if he's going to be able to command that kind of money anymore on another contract before he retires. So I think people will creep up on Tyreek Hill at the receiver position. I'm just not convinced anybody's going to eclipse him anytime soon. Because I got to believe, even though the cap's going up and up and up, Maddie, I can't see an NFL owner being willing to reset that market again after what we just saw this offseason. You know what I mean? I think they're going to be a little more strict with their money at the receiver position because, I mean, Miami blew the roof off the whole thing because they were desperate for somebody. Yeah. And that's what sometimes leads to contracts like that.
Thank you, Miami. Marquise Brown was, I cannot believe I thought he was a third rounder. Marquise Brown was a first round pick in the 2019 NFL draft. He was the 25th pick overall by the Baltimore Ravens. So it'll be interesting to see how he produces in that offense, knowing what he was given in the Ravens system, maybe not performing as you would think a first rounder would, but he also wasn't throwing the ball as much as he thinks he should have been. And it'll be cool to see what he can do in that Cardinals offense. And yeah, you talk about the receiver market and how it could maybe not be reset that soon because of what happened this offseason. You're totally right. These receivers who are getting paid right now are on their second contracts, and some of them could be finishing out their NFL careers on that second contract. Right. So the next contract you're going to be seeing is these youngsters who are finishing up with their rookie contracts in a few seasons. But the wide receiver has just become such an important position in the NFL today. Yeah. I mean, you've got your quarterback, you've got your left tackle, and you've got your wide receivers. They are so important. important on offense. Yes, on offense. And those are the guys that are getting the money now. It'll, I would love to like look at a crystal ball and see what the league is going to look like in 15 to 20 years from now to see if it's still the same that it is, or if it ever shifts back to more of a running back, not running back heavy, but how it'll look like, because it's just wild to see how it has transformed and how strong it has gotten, because of the quarterbacks that have came out of the college football game the last 5 to 10 years, and seeing how that's transformed NFL offenses today.
The other bit of NFL news that was interesting was Coach Pete Carroll went before the media in Seattle and basically said he doesn't see the Seahawks trading for a quarterback before the season starts. So he was asked several different ways about this subject, and basically he said, we're always competing. I'm not saying anything you didn't think I was going to say, but fortunately that's always been the way we've operated. I don't see us making a trade for anybody at all. I don't see that happening. But we're certainly going to continue to be open to chances to help our club. And meanwhile, we're just going to be battling and competing our tails off. There are always possibilities, so we stay open to that. So then somebody actually had the wise idea of asking him, because Baker Mayfield is the name that keeps coming up here. Mm-hmm. The Seattle is the only team without a true number one starting quarterback. No offense to Geno Smith, but or Drew Locke, but that those are the facts. So those are the top two quarterbacks on their roster right now. So being in need of an upgrade is probably an understatement. And Mayfield is a guy that's twisting in the wind in Cleveland because nobody wants to take on his $19 million a year salary. Well, that means in all likelihood, the Browns are going to eventually have to just release him, which then makes his contract go away as well. That's when Seattle is probably most interested, when they can start fresh with him on a new contract. So somebody said or asked him about the possibility of adding a quarterback who could become a free agent. Wink, wink, nod, nod, elbow, elbow.
We won't say the name, but you guessed it.
So Carol says, there's no chance I'm going to tell you anything more than what I just told you, but I love you for trying. He said, we're going to keep looking, seeing what's available, but only to help our club and try to make us better. If the case presents itself, we'll be ready for it. So essentially, Seattle's not interested in Baker Mayfield until he gets released by the Browns. And we had heard those reports yesterday. Steve and I were talking about it, Maddie, about how no other team in the league is remotely willing to do the Browns any favors. And the Browns, as we have heard in reports, have already offered to pay some of that, cover some of that salary if you take Baker Mayfield off our hands, and they still have no takers.
Which is wild that the Browns are trying that hard to be like, hey, you know what? We'll help you out here. Just get this guy away from us and off our hands. But, man, Baker Mayfield, his career with the Browns, what is to come for him? Will he end up with the Seahawks? What is that going to look like this coming season? Like, how many more years does he have in him before people are like, okay, we're either sold or we're ready to move on?
Yeah, it's, I mean, he's an interesting case study. There's a part of me that kind of feels a little bad for him, only because he decided last year, even with a torn labrum in his non-throwing shoulder, he was going to gut it out and play the season, be there for his teammates, et cetera, et cetera. And his quality of play suffered because he was injured, and he probably hurt his value as a result. And so there's a small part of me that hopes he does get a legitimate second chance to start, kind of, you know, jumpstart his career again and see what really he can do. Will he ever be great? I don't know. I think he could be a capable player in this league. The question is he going to get that chance? And right now, there's only one musical chair still empty, and I would say it's probably Seattle. Could you argue Carolina? Yeah, but I don't know. Who'd they got? They got Collar, right? The Ole Miss quarterback? Didn't they draft him?
Yep.
So probably not. Or Matt Corral, Collar. What am I saying, Collar? Matt Corral. It's Seattle or bust, really, for a chance to legitimately start, I think, next year for him. So we'll just have to wait for that other shoe to drop. Interesting list, Maddie, on NFL.com. Nick Shook put together top 10 games of the 2022 NFL season. As we all know, the NFL schedule comes out next week.
Get ready.
On Thursday. And we already know who everyone is playing. We just don't know when. So NFL.com decided to look at the what they felt were the 10 best regular season matchups in 2022 this fall. We don't know when, but we know who. And the Bills were on the list twice, Maddie. So number 10, Jacksonville at the Jets. Not sure why that one's... I guess it's the Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson thing, the top two picks from the draft.
And hoping that all the additions both of those teams have see how much better each of them are. Couple years. Is it going to work yet?
See how much better they are. In this, you know, I mean, the Jags have a whole new coaching staff. Number 9 was the Browns at the Texans. This is like the Deshaun Watson Bowl.
Yes.
Based on the trade that happened this offseason, provided he's even playing. Because for all we know, there could be a suspension enacted by the time we get to the regular season. We just don't know. Number 8, Miami at the Niners. This is the Mike McDaniel Bowl, you know, going against his mentor, Kyle Shanahan, and that whole ball of wax. Number 7, Baltimore at Cincinnati.
Okay.
So, you know, division rivalry. Mm-hmm. Cincinnati, the new kid on the block that was the champ of the division. Baltimore trying to come back from a ridiculous season of injuries that included Lamar Jackson. All right, I'll buy that for a dollar. Number 6, Rams at Bucks. Two most recent Super Bowl champs there. Okay.
I get it. It'll be competitive, hopefully.
Chargers at the Raiders. Two much improved teams in the AFC West. Okay, division battle. Get it. Number 4, Packers at Bills. So, you know, old guard quarterback Aaron Rodgers comes to play new guard quarterback Josh Allen. Okay, sign me up. I'm interested in that one. You know, it's funny because the last time the Bills played the Packers in Green Bay, Josh was a rookie, started the game. They got shut out. Bills did not score a point in that game. They got shut out. Kansas City at Tampa is the number 3 game. Title rematch from the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Totally get it. Number 2, Denver at Seattle, the Russell Wilson Bowl. So Nick Shook really took a defined track here. He's looking at all of these, like, quote-unquote revenge reunion games and just took it to the bank. Number 1, speaking of revenge reunion games, Buffalo at Kansas City. And I think we know the reason for that one.
Number 1 on the list. Oh, these two teams have matched up against each other so much in the last couple of seasons. It'll be a great game, whatever is slated on the schedule. I would imagine that has to be one of the night games, whether it's Thursday or Sunday or Monday, wherever
it's
it lands
prime.
On
that's
the schedule.
A prime timer. That's a lot. Lock
a must,
it in.
Yeah.
Lock it in. That's a prime time game. I will say this, Maddie, because I know you talk to a lot of people in the league too. Just in everybody that I've come in contact with, either on the phone or in person, like when we were out at the Combine in February, to a person, they have all said that might have been the best playoff game they have ever witnessed in their life. And I'm talking people that are from like age 30 all the way up to age 65. Best playoff game they have ever seen. And Nick Shook, in the first sentence in describing Bills at Chiefs, which is number 1 on his list, said, "We should take a moment to thank the scheduling gods for delivering a rematch of the best game of the 2021 season and perhaps ever." It's amazing how many people so quickly have rocketed this game to the top of their list for entertainment value. And I understand why, but we're talking like 100 years of NFL. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like it's not even a debate. People are just putting it up there. And I realize we're in a what have you done for me lately world, maybe now more than ever.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It was a hell of a game. I'm just surprised that so many people so quickly just be like, best game ever. best playoff game I've ever seen.
Nothing is going to top it. So many people at the Combine, I'm sure it was the same for you, came up to me and they were like, that game, oh my gosh, like that was wild. It was so entertaining. And my like first reaction is, do you know what that game did to me though?
Don't talk
like,
to me about it.
Yeah, it was entertaining, but the smile that you have, I am not sharing that smile with you about the game.
Right. So hopefully the outcome is better for the Bills this time around, although the Bills did beat the Chiefs in the regular season last year, things just didn't go right at the end in the playoffs. So those are the top 10 ranked games for the 2022 regular season. I just thought it was a list worth going down, and it was nice to see the Bills appeared on it twice, so that was kind of cool. The OBL Fan Friday mailbag is open for you. Any question you have on the Bills, the league at large, maybe the draft class, fire them off either at One Bills Live on Twitter, or you can give us a call. Open phone line for you at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Manny and I, happy to answer anything for you. We will take a break here, but when we come back, there might be a little bit of time for some What's for Lunch. We may get to the menu next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, so we'll open the menu for What's for Lunch in just a little bit. First, we are going to go to our mock draft recap. Maddie had the good idea to say, hey, we track all these mocks for months. Why don't we actually go back and see who the heck was right? Because I will tell you, more often than not, the draft Knicks miss the mark. And it is very much like throwing darts.
Yes.
So, because... I mean, what do we have, 9 trades in the first round? I don't think anybody had that.
Yeah, who predicted that?
But including 2 player trades.
Yeah. Out of the – so we tracked, when it was all said and done, I tracked 150 mock drafts starting January 25th and ending the day of the NFL draft on Thursday. So out of those 150, I'll have you guess first. How many do you think got it right in the first round pick?
I'm going to say out of 150, I'm going to say 14 got it right.
Okay. That's a good guess. 10 people got it right.
Okay.
And actually, when you looked at the most mocked players, so high and away above everybody was Trent McDuffie, which is interesting to see. He went right before the Buffalo Bills drafted. And then next were a group of a couple players who were mocked to the Buffalo Bills 10 times, and Kyir was right there with 10. So he was mocked to the Bills 10 times, so was Breece Hall, and so was Kyler Gordon out of Washington. So 10 people got it right, and... the first person who got it right was on January 21st.
Wow.
Sam Monson's from PFF.
Yeah,
Sam Monson.
Yeah.
He
Sam
got
on.
It right. So he was the first one to get it right. And then as I go down my list here, Luke Easterling from DraftWire also got it right in January. And then we move into February. John Ledyard from the Pewter Report got it right.
Okay.
And
there were
a couple big names who got it right. Another writer for the Pewter Report, J.C. Allen, another person from PFF in April. Then you started to see it pop up in April quite a bit there. Seth Galina from PFF got it right. Let's see. A couple people from NFL Network got it right. Lance
Zierlein
got it right. And then a couple people from the Draft Network, Kyle Krabs. Who else got it right? Danny Kelly from The Ringer got it right. This was April 27th, so right before,
before
the draft. And then on draft day, the last person who got it right was Dane Brugler from The Athletic.
All right, Dane. We got to see. I want to see the timestamp on that mock draft.
Right.
Are we sure he got it in before the draft started? and I'm guessing there's no way to track this as to how many people predicted any kind of trades for the Bills. Probably not many.
I don't
picking all the way down there at 25. I'm guessing no.
There were a couple.
Some people do mocks with trades. Some people don't.
If I scroll through my document here, there were I think three or four people that predicted that we would trade. But as I'm looking, most of these trades were to trade out of the first
down.
Round, not trade up.
Yeah, I don't think too many people had the Bills going up, and they only went up a couple of spots. But still, yeah. Well, good. I mean, for the people that pegged it in January, good on you, man. I mean, 3 months out and hitting it.
Yeah.
Sam Monson from PFF. No wonder he liked the Bills draft so much. You made me look good.
Right.
That's kind of cool.
Not too many people got James Cook, though. Yeah. I think only one mock draft that I saw had
just
James
one.
Cook. Yeah.
Once you get to round two, it's kind of – it's really hard to figure out what people – because you don't – because you're trying to do a two-round – like, think about it if GMs had to make picks in the second round without knowing what the first-round picks were.
Yeah, what, I mean, do, you, what do you do?
Yeah. That's kind of what you're doing.
A little bit too hard, but –
supremely difficult, but they make people do seven-round mocks, which to me is insane. Just the fact of having to think about 262 picks and what makes sense for team. Oh, my gosh. My eyes would fall out of my head and my brain would be fried. I don't know how people do that in terms of just making all the picks. My goodness. Well, that's cool. I'm glad you followed up on that because you always wonder. I remember I did look back one time. I can't remember what year it was to see how some of the bigger name guys did. And I think Daniel Jeremiah got six right in a draft. And it was like it was a decent quarterback draft, but it wasn't like a big name quarterback draft where you can easily – like, it wasn't like Andrew Luck going first. It wasn't one of those. And he got six right, and Mel Kiper only got one in the entire first round. And I think people are somewhat amazed by that, but that's how hard it is because you don't know what's going to happen in the draft.
Yeah, this first round of this year's NFL draft with the quarterbacks trying to figure out where they would go, who was going to be the first quarterback off the board. It was wild to predict something like that. And if you have a draft where quarterbacks aren't going to go off the board as high, then it's really tough to predict what's going to happen after pick number 3, pick number 10, pick number 15. What are these teams going to do? And then you saw all these trades happen in the first round and continue on throughout the NFL draft. It was an interesting draft. And I feel like from a working standpoint of working the NFL draft, usually by Saturday, you come into the office and you're running off like no sleep, a couple hours of sleep each night. And you're like, this day is going to go by so slow. We've got rounds 4 through 7, like, not excited for it. This year's NFL draft, at least for me, it went by so quickly.
It was fast. And think about this, though. So we had Eric Allen from NewYorkJets.com on the other day on the show, and I was messing with him because after all the trades they made, including the one to get back up into the bottom of the first round to take Jermaine Johnson, their last pick was halfway through round 4.
Yeah.
And then they were done. Mm-hmm. I said, Eric, I'm supremely jealous. I said, were you home watching round 6 and 7? He goes, I did get home before round 6 was over.
Oh, my gosh.
Can you imagine?
No.
That guy had dinner at home on Saturday of the draft. That's unheard of. So, I mean, not only did the Jets front office make all their fans happy, they probably made all the media in New York happy for giving them an early day on Saturday. That was just great. Yeah. Done by the fourth round.
Once you get to the seventh round, if you have picks at the bottom of the seventh round, you're like, come on, trade the pick. Come on, trade the pick. Why are we sitting around here till the end of the seventh round? Like, let's just get this over with. Trade
the pick.
Well,
those guys aren't done after the draft's over anyway. They're trying to sign all those undrafted rookies that are still out there and available. So, yeah. All right. Well, good info there. So 10, you said? 10.
10 people decided that Kyir Elam was heading to Buffalo with that. But they guessed number 25. They didn't get the number right, but they guessed we were going to draft Kyir Elam. Yep.
Or no, not even 15%.
Not even.
It was less than that. Like 7.
Out of 150 mock drafts that we tracked. So 10 people got it right. He was the second most favorited player to be mocked by the Buffalo Bills, or mocked to the Buffalo Bills, I should say. So good on you guys. I think it was higher than Greg Rousseau. And I'll have to check that in the break because I do have that spreadsheet with me. So I'll
have
to
pick
see.
30. It was even harder to
I'll
get down there.
I'll have to see who got that right.
All right. Well, let's go to the phones because the OBL Fan Friday mailbag is open. And leading us off today is Joe on a cell. What do you have for us, Joe? You're on One Bills Live.
Hi. I know you guys were talking about compensation earlier.
Yeah.
Could you walk me through the free agent compensation more specifically? Do they get signing bonuses? Do they have to negotiate it? What happens when they come in for the rookie camp? What happens, during summer camp? And then if they should make the team, I presume they get the league minimum, or if they make, or if they're put on the squad, then they make whatever they make. But I'm kind of curious about the compensation piece, to the best you understand it.
Yeah,
I'll
so
hang up and listen.
Yeah, no
Thank
problem,
you.
Joe. It's not mandatory that rookies be under contract to participate in rookie minicamp. So they can come in mm-hmm. without a contract and participate in that. It's training camp. That's when they have to be signed by in order to participate. Otherwise, they put themselves at risk, you know, financially and, you know, because of their physical health is pretty much tied to what they're going to get paid in a contract. So that's why they'll hold out and not take the field if they're not signed. But that kind of all went away with the new CBA and the rookie wage scale. So, yes, there are signing bonuses. In many cases, rookie first-round picks, their entire salary is guaranteed. So whether it's in bonus form, and there are different kinds of bonuses too. There are roster bonuses that kick in at different times of the year. There are incentives that kick in based on certain production levels that they might reach, playing time levels that
they
might reach.
Who did we see that had – what team had the offensive lineman where it was incentive-based with how much you weigh?
Oh, to control the weight?
Yeah.
Yeah, that does happen too. So if there's a player that
gets a little wild.
Yeah, if there's a player that they believe has a weight maintenance issue, they will either, in a positive way, put bonuses in if they stay under a certain weight and they'll weigh him in every week, or they will penalize him and fine him if he doesn't make certain weight demands that the team can put on him. You don't always see that in contracts, but it does exist. And then I think the other part of Joe's question was, how do they get paid? Those salaries do not kick in until they reach the regular season, where their salary is divided over the 18 weeks of the season. Payday is usually Monday. During the course of the off season, especially training camp, they will get a stipend that is not part of their salary, but for coming out to camp and participating there. So they'll get a stipend to kind of carry them through, mm-hmm. you know, being on campus, and I guess it's the equivalent of sending your kid to college with spending money is kind of how that works. But hopefully that's enough detail on that. Bob in Rochester, hang tight. We will get to you, but we have to take a break here. Maddie and I answering more of your questions from the OBL Friday Fan Mailbag next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. I want to jump right back to the phones here as the OBL Fan Friday mailbag is open. And as promised, we go to Bob in Rochester next. What do you have for us, Bob? You're on One Bills Live.
Can you hear me, Chris?
I can, Bob. What do you have for us?
Thought you might be interested. I got in front of me a copy of the Lindy's draft guide.
Okay.
That I bought. And it's probably a couple months old. I thought you might find a couple things interested.
All right, what do you have? Fire it off.
And this? Huh?
Fire away.
Okay, in this book, they got the top 100 players listed. And Mr. Elam is 8 out of 100.
Okay, in the top 100 listing?
They also list him as the number 2 safety in the book out of all the safeties.
Safety?
And this got at least 30. But okay. The thing I think you might find most interesting is they picked him to go to the Buffalo Bills, but at the 25th pick.
Okay, keeping their original pick. I got it, Bob. We are up against the break, but thank you for the call. Appreciate it. There was some talk, like, early in the pre-draft run-up, Maddie, about Kyir Elam as a potential safety option, which, I don't know, I found that peculiar only because it's harder to find corners than it is to find safety. So if the guy's good enough to play corner, why would you move him? But I think a lot of people just looked at his height mm-hmm. and his length
yeah.
and said, oh, put him at safety. He'd be great there. And I'm just like, why are you going to do that? Guy plays he plays press man corner. Like, leave him there.
Safeties don't do that.
Yeah, well, most of them don't. As we know, you know, Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer both came from a cornerback background before they moved to safety full time, you know, as they spent more time in the league. But Kyer Elam, man, leave him at corner. My gosh. I was surprised when I heard that in more than one place, just in people talking about the draft as a whole. And I was like, really? You want to do that with an athlete that's that good and you can put out on an island and, you know, say, hey, go follow this guy around the whole game? I don't know why you would do that. Granted, if you put him at safety, he would be an ultra versatile safety because he could come down and cover people. But I just let him do what he does best the whole game.
Yeah, leave him at cornerback also. I mean, I know these people are probably saying, like, you know, he can move to safety. Not sure what team he was going to go to, but the Buffalo Bills have safety locked up, so we're all good there. We need a cornerback, so that I think that's where Kyer fits most. But, I mean, hopefully Kyer's playing his entire career here with the Buffalo Bills because we like him so much, and he produces at a really high level. But you wonder if he ever goes anywhere else, if teams look at him differently in that way.
Yeah, no question about it. Let's go to the OBL Friday mailbag online at Twitter at One Bills Live. And Bills fan 12-83 asks, what kind of role do you think Zach Moss will play for the team this year? I'm not expecting much, but I haven't completely written him off either. I'm hopeful injuries accounted for his struggles and he can get it turned back around. Go Bills. I mean, for me, I think there is going to be strong competition at the position. I think the only guys you can definitively count on being on the roster in the fall are probably Singletary and Cook. And then it comes down to Moss and Duke Johnson. And they do two very different things.
Mm-hmm.
Johnson does a lot of the pass catching stuff, while Moss is kind of the battering ram in between the tackles guy. And so while I think some people look at it and say, oh, it's going to be a competition between Cook and Duke Johnson because they do the same thing, I would respectfully disagree because I think Cook's on the roster no matter what. And so with that in mind, it becomes a competition of who is excelling in their role better, Zach Moss or Duke Johnson.
Yeah. And also, what flavor do you want there, right? You have Devin Singletary, you know his skill set. You have James Cook, you know his skill set. He's the guy who can run the ball and catch the ball. Do you want another player similar to that in Duke Johnson compared to James Cook? And where does Zach Moss fit into the fold? So would you rather have another person that is kind of like James Cook or kind of like Duke Johnson in that it's a pass-catching running back? So would you rather have two of those guys, or would you rather have somebody like Zach Moss, like you said, who could go in between the tackles, could kind of be that running back that you're going to need on a shorter yardage situation?
Right. And so you say, well, if Coach McDermott decides he doesn't want Josh Allen to be their short yardage person all the time and take unnecessary hits, Do you feel comfortable turning to Zach Moss because he's killing it in short yardage situations in the preseason?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's doing like 5 third-and-ones and he gets them all, and you're like, oh, maybe we could use him in that role and take hits off Josh Allen. Maybe he proves he deserves a role in the offense. So hypothetically, let's just say he makes the team. What's his role for the team this year? I think it's between the tackles running, short yardage running. I'm not saying he can't catch the football, but when you have people that are vastly superior as a matchup problem, like a James Cook or a Duke Johnson, he's probably not going to be doing much of that. So that would be the role I would see for him if, in fact, he makes the roster. But I think he and Duke Johnson are not necessarily locks as it stands right now. We have to take a break here because when we come back, we're going to be joined by somebody who kind of put together a quintessential history of Brandon Bean's time as general manager of the Bills. It's Mike Silver from Bally Sports. He's an NFL columnist for them, and he just recently wrote a piece on Brandon Bean and his formula on building a champion here in Buffalo. We'll talk to Mike next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Touchdown, Buffalo! And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
All right, hour number two here on a Friday. Chris Brown, Maddie Glad with you. One Bills Live is the show, and pleased to be joined now by the founder of Backstage Media and NFL columnist for Bally Sports. It's Mike Silver joining us, who just put together a piece on Brandon Bean's lasting formula to build a champion in Buffalo. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Chris. Hey, Maddie. Hope you guys are doing well.
Yeah, we're doing all right. And, you know, I wanted to start here because I know you've met and talked to Brandon before, you know, but now he's in year five of this thing. And I know that you got that quote early in your story from Joe Shane, who, you know, I think we all know Brandon socially is a very friendly person. And then Joe rips off, he's a killer. Is there anything, is there anything about Brandon now that just in your interactions with him and the time you were here in Buffalo last week that maybe struck you as different from what you maybe had previously thought of him? Has he changed at all, I guess?
Not really. I think that, you know, all talent evaluators say, I'm not going to reach. I'm going to stick to my board. I'm not going to, you know, make crazy moves that jeopardize the future of the franchise. I'm not going to draft for need. And they're all kind of lying, right? I mean, everyone kind of drafts for need and, you know, GMs don't get that long necessarily on the job. And you can't just passively let things come to you unless you have consecutive first ballot Hall of Fame quarterbacks for more than three decades, like one franchise over in Wisconsin. And I would even quarrel with that approach. And so would one of those franchise quarterbacks, by the way. But, you know, what I like about Brandon is that he does have an element of, I'm not going to overreach. I'm not going to go all in for one season. I'm going to be methodical about it. And I'm going to let the, you know, the integrity of the board be honored. But when he really wants something, he goes and gets it unequivocally, aggressively, and in a very targeted and smart manner. And we've seen that from the outset. And in the story I wrote, I know you guys know all this, but I detailed all the moves that kind of led up to the Josh Allen on the clock acquisition, you know, starting with getting rid of Sammy Watkins and Ronald Darby and, you know, the Cordy Glenn trade. And, you know, it was kind of a long, well thought out plan. You know, he's done it in numerous other occasions, most famously with Stephon Diggs, which turned out to be a transformative trade. And even after, you know, doing his best to convince me on Wednesday that he probably wasn't trading up this year, he did identify a need and trade up two spots to go get a cornerback that he thinks can make a difference. And so I like that a lot. And it's not like he just goes nuts and is totally reckless, but when he wants something, he goes and gets it.
It's funny because now that they're sitting around waiting on night one instead of drafting early on in the NFL draft, you'll hear him say leading up to the NFL draft, you know, I need to be patient. I need to be a patient person. This is why I have a lot of people in the room with me so I don't make any moves that I'm going to regret later on. But just the weekend overall, what did you take away from that weekend? I mean, we get to cover the team every day, but is there anything that didn't make the story that, you know, you'll remember from that weekend or that's worth noting about the organization or the people that you got to interact with from the first round, you know, on until the second and third round?
Well, it's just really cool to see where the franchise is. And, you know, I got to know Kim Pegula very early on in her tenure and then got to know Terry really well. And, you know, I went out there for NFL Network to do a big feature on Cam that ran on game day morning and kind of did an all-access weekend following her around with cameras. Always a joy for the subject, I know, although Kim handled it amazingly. And, I remember at the time just kind of being struck by the fact that locally there was some skepticism about them, which I thought was interesting because as an outsider, I was like, well, they saved the team. You know, it didn't move. They developed downtown. There's a lot of things that you could be excited about as a resident about them. And yet, you know, I know that there was skepticism. I think now people, I would imagine, are feeling very, very positive. And, you know, the stadium deal looks like it's going to get done. And so the team really is saved for the region. And obviously they've, you know, they've cycled through some people and made some decisions and changed some things up. But, you know, I think the franchise is just in such a healthy place. It's, you know, it's going to stay in Western New York. It's got a quarterback who may be, by all indications, someone who keeps the team as a legit contender for a decade plus. And they've done a really good job of building around him and making moves that kind of, you know, give promise to that belief. So, you know, will there be a parade or parades? Will confetti fall? I mean, I think it's, you know, the AFC is a beast and there are a lot of good teams, but, you know, you're going to get a lot of predictions that the Bills will win in 2022 or in the 2022 season, and we'll see what happens.
I know, Mike, that Brandon is not new to the league. I mean, he's been, you know, paying his dues for 20 years and he's got a lot of strong relationships around the league. But knowing that we kind of deal with Bills myopia here, I'm curious to ask you, do you think Brandon's tenure here as GM of the Bills has widespread respect in terms of what he's built? I'm just curious how the rest of the league views the Bills. Is it more than just, hey, they finally got a quarterback? It's more than that as far as Brandon's concerned around league, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is, and I hope it is, because, you know, he's earned it. He's, you know, he's made moves that are not amazing like every GM, but you know, hasn't, you know, lived in them to the point where he's trying to justify them. You know, he's been able to cut his losses at times, and he's obviously made some very, very good moves. And when you do hit on the quarterback, obviously, you know, the world opens up and the angels sing and the sky is always blue and it's awesome. And when you don't, it's the worst and you probably won't stay in your job that long. So I don't want to understate the importance of getting the quarterback right. You know, one thing they did when they looked at quarterbacks was they did a really nice job of not just saying who's the best guy or who do we love. It's who's the best guy for here now. And that was everything from balls that can zip through the wind because they're thrown so hard to, you know, more of a blue collar mentality and someone who would embrace kind of the, you know, a storied franchise that was down on its, you know, down on its luck, you know, from the Music City Miracle on. And so they got the quarterback right in a lot of ways. You know, they had a plan and they went and got it. And the other thing I would say is that, you know, the best coach GM tandems by far are the ones where there is alignment and where you don't, you know, you don't often hear about who made what pick or who's doing what. You know, Pete Carroll and John Schneider in Seattle for all these years would be, you know, an example where you're not really focused on who has the power or who's making the call. It's just two people tethered together, aligned. Obviously there's a push and pull and there are some disagreements, but you know, Brandon Bean knows what Sean McDermott wants and what his staff wants, and Sean McDermott and his staff do a great job of coaching up and developing the players that Brandon Bean and his personnel people get them. So it really is a good coach GM marriage, and that's really important.
Well, the Bills have their first round pick in Kair Elam. They've got Josh Allen. They swung on Von Miller and got him during free agency. Stephon Diggs is secured for a while. So they filled a lot of holes this offseason and then into this NFL draft. So what do you think about the Bills draft class and kind of where they bolstered up areas that were positions of need for them? You know, you look at a team like the Bills, it's kind of like you're not drafting because you need all these guys to have a role immediately. It's kind of like, where can we fill in some depth pieces here? Who do we see that could be a viable option maybe in a couple seasons? So overall, what did you think of the players that were added onto the squad through the NFL draft?
Well, unlike some of my peers, I do not pretend to be a talent evaluator. When I do watch college football, I watch my alma mater, Cal. You see the helmet in the background, once belonged to Jared Goff. And a lot of times when you're watching Cal, you're not necessarily watching high-level football. Let's just say that. No Rose Bowl in my lifetime, although I do have much love. So, you know, I don't sit there and break down film, but I do evaluate process. And I would say this, you know, first of all, he aggressively went out and got a guy at a position that was important with Levi Wallace gone, with Trey White recovering from the ACL, and you can never have enough corners. And, you know, people might say, well, and this is not specific to any one corner, but Brandon and I talked about this. People kind of nitpick when they grade corners sometimes and say, well, he's really a second round talent. And Brandon told me, you better be careful when you do that, because it's such a premium position that those guys that you have said, you know, maybe he's down here, they'll be gone. And so, you know, I think he had four people that he was much higher on, and two went in the first four, and then Trent McDuffie went at 21, and he was like, I think I might want to get moving. And what it ultimately cost him was a fourth round pick. So I like that. I like that they, you know, were able to execute some trade downs. And you know, I believe that he still would have taken James Cook had he not done the two trade downs. And that was a process he likened to playing the four corners offense, which, Maddie, I know you have no idea what that is, but before there was a shot clock in college basketball, you could just stall when you had a lead. And famously, Dean Smith's teams at North Carolina would get a really good point guard and put the other people in the four corners of the front court and just have them dribble around or throw it to one of the corners. It was really annoying and maddening, but effective. So he was stalling to see if he could get an even better trade down that would net him back that lost fourth round pick. I like the fact that he traded up again in the fifth round to get a receiver, you know, that he believed was not going to be there, and someone that he would have taken in the fourth round had they been on the clock. I have a couple little nitpicky things. Again, I'm not a talent evaluator. Number one, I talked to some people on the outside who told me things about Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker the third, that the top two running backs on most people's boards, that made me go, whoa, like they're really that good. And I don't know if they are or not, but if they're as good as some people depicted to me, I would have loved to see the Bills do something to get one of them, whether it was a dramatic trade up to get much higher in the second round or even taking one with that 25th overall pick, because I just think it could be such a difference maker. And Brandon says, and I put this in the story, he believes that Zach Moss wasn't really right last year, you know, couldn't cut, you know, to his left the way he had because he was still recovering from the injury from the 2020 playoffs. And so he believes he's going to be much better, that he and Devin Singletary and now James Cook will be, you know, a good combination. I'm not disputing that. I'm just thinking, man, if either one of those running backs turns out to be as good as some people I trust believe they will, then, man, I would have loved to see that. And then my second qualm, and Brandon knows all about this because we talked about it before he made this pick and after, and that is he took a punter. Now, listen, punters are football players. I don't want to say that I don't respect punters. I do. I just don't respect them as much as I respect the other 52. And we're talking about a team that literally just played a playoff game where they did not need the punter because they destroyed the New England Patriots so resoundingly that the punter never got to do his thing. Wait, you know what? We're on a Bills show. Let me say that again. There was a playoff game where the Buffalo Bills destroyed the New England Patriots so resoundingly that they never needed to punt. That's got to just feel good to hear over and over and over. Yeah, because my least favorite game of the year was the Bills-Patriots regular season game where the Patriots threw, what, three times, and Bill Belichick's genius was celebrated, and it was like, oh, man, enough of this. I'm more comfortable with the Bill Belichick throwing the phone at the end of the 2020 regular season against the Bills, or not being able to stop them ever from getting in the end zone, but I digress. Anyway, I went to Cal. I mentioned they had a punter named Brian Anger, who's still in the league. He was a very, very good college punter, and we punted plenty, so I got to see him. He was selected in the third round of the 2012 draft by the Jacksonville Jaguars. Russell Wilson was on the board at the time, by the way, but be that as it may, I've been in the Jaguars war room before, but that year I was not. I think I was in the Rams war room. But when I saw that pick, I said to somebody, if Brian Anger has a special power suddenly that ensures, based on the spin of his punts, that every single punt will be fumbled or muffed by the return man, I still wouldn't take him in the third, you know, maybe the fifth. I just think it's crazy. So I was joking with Brandon on Friday night about, are you actually going to take a punter? And, you know, he was just kind of laughing. And so sure enough, right there, the first pick of the sixth round, the punt god from San Diego State comes off the board. And, you know, of course I texted him and I got back a text. That was for you. So if this guy becomes Ray Guy and, you know, does incredible things, then once again, I will stand corrected. But I'm just not a huge fan of punters being drafted. And by the way, I don't really play fantasy much, but when I help people with their fantasy drafts or my kids or whatever, I don't like kickers or defenses being drafted anywhere but the final two picks. So I am consistent in that regard.
Fair enough. Listen, Mike, thanks for the time. We appreciate you jumping on with us and kind of spelling out some of the details from your story. Brandon Bean's lasting formula to build a champion in Buffalo. It's on ballysports.com. Thanks again, Mike. Appreciate the time.
You're welcome. How's that for a filibuster to end things?
You can just keep saying the Bills blanked the Patriots and they didn't have to punt. I mean, you could say that 100 times.
I mean, they were really overmatched in that game. One franchise just looked so healthy and robust, and the other just looked futile and overmatched, really.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. We'll catch up with you down the line.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
All right, that's Mike Silver joining us here from Bally Sports. Writer and contributor there. You can check out that story. I think the most interesting part of the story, we were a little short on time. I was going to ask him, didn't get a chance to, because I think the biggest thing that he unearthed in the whole write-up was that Brandon remains committed to being to creating a team that is a perennial contender.
Yeah.
Even as close as people perceive the Bills to be this year to winning the whole kit and caboodle, he's still not compromising, remaining competitive in the future to go all in this year. And I can understand why it would be very tempting to do that, because the Rams made it work last year by going all in on it. They're signing, you know, they're trading for Von Miller. They're signing Odell Beckham Jr. late in the year. They're adding all these extra pieces. You know, they have the famous mantra for draft picks, as we know, which can't be said on the air. So it would be very tempting to go that route, knowing how much of a copycat league it is. But he's staying true to his core philosophy, which is to stay perennially competitive. And while you do everything you can to make your roster as strong as it can be for the year in which you're set to play, you don't do it at the expense of the next year or even the year after that.
Yeah, and Brandon has been asked that question so many times throughout the offseason, you know, does the Rams formula work? Would you ever want to do something like that? And, you know, he's like, yeah, it could work for a team, but we're not going to do that here because we want to be good for multiple seasons. We don't want to be a one-and-done NFL team in Buffalo. We want to be a team that's good for seasons to come. I also love the part of the story where Mike just spells out what went down leading up to the Bills drafting Josh Allen. There's some really funny parts in that story. I know most of us know the story, but it's always fun to relive. So he spells it out in a perfect and hilarious way. So if you haven't read it yet, make sure you go check it out on Bally Sports.
Yeah, Joe was a good write-up there. I think the funniest part was how it was revealed that Joe Shane pretty much sweat through his suit during the moves they made to get up to pick Josh Allen at 7th overall in the 2018 draft. So definitely a good read at ballysports.com. Matty, I was going to get to this later, but I'll get to it now. The travel, the total air miles set to be covered by each of the 32 NFL teams for this coming season. While we do not know again when everybody is playing whomever, and we know where, we just don't know when. So with that in mind, somebody put together the 32 NFL team travel totals for the upcoming season. And the team that will travel the most, and they're usually close to the top of the board every time, mm-hmm. are the Seattle Seahawks. Now, they have an international game, as we know. They're playing in Germany against the Bucks, I want to say, if I remember right. So they're going to be playing in Germany. So that, go from Seattle to Germany. Hello. I wonder if it's shorter to go across the Pacific. Go that way to Germany? Pacific Ocean's a lot bigger than the Atlantic. So I don't know. It might still be better to come east and keep on trucking across the Atlantic. Either way, they're traveling more air miles than anybody else in the league this year. 29,446 miles.
Wild.
The total time zone tally. By the end of the year, they're going to cross 34 time zones. Holy cow.
It's going to be a team well-traveled up on that list. Not too many teams are over 25,000 miles traveled.
The Dolphins are, though, from the Bills
division. Four teams, yeah.
Dolphins are over 25,000 miles. They'll cross 14 time zones. Really, it's the Seahawks and the Broncos.
Yeah.
That are doing the most travel and the most time zone.
They got the short end of the stick. Sorry, guys.
And it's harder because a lot of those West Coast teams usually do a lot of travel miles because there are, you know, just based on the history of the league, it kind of swept east to west there. And so a lot of teams are on this side of the Mississippi River, let alone the Rockies. So it's going to be tough. The Bills, in case you're wondering, are 23rd on this list. They only have to travel a little under 14,000 miles this year, which is great. Their longest trip, obviously, is going to be their road game at the Rams in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
But that is their only trip to the West Coast.
Yeah,
their next
West
furthest
Coast trip
west is Kansas City, and their furthest trip south, obviously, is Miami. Those are probably their three longest trips the whole season. So all things considered there. I mean, otherwise, you're looking at basically the Great Lakes area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the NFC North, because they got to go to Chicago and Detroit. And then it's AFC North teams, Baltimore, Cincinnati. And then it's their division after that.
Yeah, it's not going to be bad at all. Ten time zones for the Bills that they'll play in. So 10
the team that travels the least, Maddie, the Pittsburgh Steelers, are only going to have 6,400 air miles. And they don't leave
their time zone. What?
The entire season.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that nuts?
How'd they get away with that?
The AFC North gets away with it because all four AFC North teams, they're in the bottom six. All four of them. So they must be playing. Let's try to figure this out. They must be playing the AFC South, right? So although Tennessee and Houston play in the Central time zone. So they can't be the AFC South. I wonder who they're playing. They're playing the AFC East. Duh. They're playing the AFC East, so that keeps them in the Eastern time zone, obviously. So their longest trip there is to Miami. And then do they play the NFC East? They must be if they're not leaving the time zone. They have to be playing the NFC East.
They're playing the NFC. I'm on their schedule right now. They're playing in the NFC North.
Oh, they have the North like we do?
They're playing the Bears and the Lions. Wait, nope.
No, how can that be? I was going to say
I'm looking at 2021, guys.
Oh, come on, man.
Woo!
I would bet they're AFC East, NFC East, and that's how they're staying in the time zone. And they must be playing Dallas at home, so they don't have to go down to Dallas and play in the central time zone. So that's how they're pulling that off. But that's not even enough to get frequent flyer miles. 6,400 miles the whole season? And the AFC has more road games this year. They have 9 road games. So
NFC South is who they're playing. Okay. Yep, I see the Panthers and the Falcons on their schedule. Now that on the right page and not last year's schedule.
Okay.
Whew.
So I've never seen that where you don't leave your time zone. Now, I haven't paid close enough attention to say that it's never happened before. I'm sure it has. But, man, that's got to be pretty rare. And the rest of the teams, Cleveland and Baltimore, they only changed time zone twice. Cincinnati changes time zones 4 times. That is a cupcake air travel schedule for
sure.
All right,
Steelers, let's see what you can do this year then. You're not traveling, you're not leaving your time zone. What's going to happen?
Can't tell anybody you got jet lag this year for sure. All right, we have to take a break here. But when we come back, Maddie sat down with Bill's third-round draft choice, Terrell Bernard, and we will bring that to you when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Maddie Glab with you. Time now, though, for us to turn to a one-on-one sit-down that Maddie was fortunate enough to have with Bills' third-round draft choice, Terrell Bernard, who was in town a day after he was selected by the Bills with the 89th overall pick.
What's up, Bills Mafia? Maddie Glab here with Terrell Bernard, one of the newest players on the Buffalo Bills. We don't know you that well, so we're going to hit you with some fun questions. Number one for you, what has it been like the last 24 hours for you getting drafted by the Buffalo Bills? 3 words to describe those 24 hours.
Fun, long, and exciting.
How do you think you're going to fit in with this team?
Yeah, I feel like I'll fit in really well. You know, the culture that's established here already and, you know, the things that Coach McDermott is building. I feel like, you know, I'm pretty similar to the guys that he's looking for and the guys that he already has on the team. So I feel like I'll fit pretty well.
We've got a bunch of goofballs on this team. So how does your personality fit in? I know rookies, you know, you're trying to find your way. Yeah. But what are you like when it comes to your personality?
Yeah, so at first I feel like I'm real laid back, kind of calm, not very talkative. But, you know, once I get to know you, then I open up a little bit and, you know, I can be goofy sometimes.
Who are you most excited to meet on this roster?
Probably Matt. You know, he's somebody that I studied a lot and, you know, try to model my game after. So it's kind of weird to, you know, be sharing a meeting room, a locker room, all that type of stuff with him. So it'd be cool to see.
Yeah, that's wild. After you watch tape on somebody, now he becomes your teammate.
For sure.
That's pretty cool. Do you have any hidden talents?
Yeah, I think I got a couple. I can juggle. I'm pretty good at ping pong. And I like to play chess.
What are you best at out of those 3?
Probably ping pong, honestly.
Okay. Yeah. The players like to play ping pong, so get ready. What's your favorite late night snack? You're going to the fridge, it's like midnight, what are you grabbing?
Yeah.
Pantry.
Yeah, so I'm probably going to grab some honey roasted peanuts and some milk. I think that's like
honey roasted peanuts and milk.
Definitely.
That like checks the box on the craving
definitely,
there?
Definitely, yeah.
Okay,
for sure.
Nice. If you had a superpower, what would it be?
Probably invisibility, so I could move around without anybody knowing where I'm at.
Okay. A couple quick questions here. Summer or winter?
Summer.
All right. Well, you're playing in a cold place, Terrell. That was a trick question.
Yeah, sorry.
You just said winter.
I'll get used to it.
It's okay. But the summers here are absolutely elite. You will enjoy them. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Okay. I love it. Sweet or salty?
Probably salty. I'm not a big sweet person.
You got the fire roasted peanuts and the milk. I mean, duh,
like
salty.
Yeah.
What do you want Bills Mafia to know about you?
Yeah, I want them to know that I'm tough, hardworking, and competitive. And, you know, I'm going to come to work every day and try to help make this team better.
I think that's what Bills Mafia wants to hear. So, Terrell, nice to meet you. And enjoy the next couple days here.
Yep, thank you very much.
All right, Terrell Bernard, who forever will be linked to Kyle Brandt, who announced the pick at the 2022 NFL Draft, waving around a chicken wing, wearing Zubaz pants, and a cool jacket. I did like his jacket, I will say that. It had a bunch of Buffalo-oriented things on the back. It had, like, Western New York mapped out. It had a Buffalo Braves logo back there. Mm-hmm. I think Benny the Butcher, there was a patch of Benny the Butcher on the back. It was pretty cool.
It was Bills Mafia jacket. I think that was part of the latest Bills Mafia collection that came out.
So he will forever have the honor of saying, Kyle Brandt introduced me.
Yeah.
And
draft day memories for the rest of your life. But he was a cool guy. It was nice to meet Terrell. I mean, we got to meet James Cook and Kair Elam as well. So they seem like a great couple of dudes, excited for them to join the team and see what they can do on this roster. I think it was really cool when Terrell was asked about, you know, what player do you watch? Who do you embody your work after? And he naturally said Matt Milano. So I think that'll be a really cool experience for him to be in a room with Matt Milano, get to learn from him. I'm sure he feels like he shares some of Matt Milano's skill sets and wants to be able to learn even more from him. So I'm interested to see where Terrell fits within the Buffalo Bills defense, within special teams. We talked about it after the show, or when we were doing the show after we drafted Terrell, and we were all talking about, you know, yeah, probably a special teams guy in his first couple seasons here. But hey, if he's a run stopper, there's a place for you on the roster on defense for sure.
The thing that was interesting to me was, so the Bills take linebacker in the third round, and then with their last pick in round 7, they take another one in Baylen Specter. And if you look at the body types of both Terrell Bernard and Baylen Specter, they're pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, if I remember right, both of them were former safeties. Another guy who was a former safety is Matt Milano.
Matt Milano.
So there's it seems as though there is a body type and an athletic skill set that the Bills look for specifically in their linebacker talent. Now, on occasion, when you have a chance to add a freakazoid, you do it. And they did that with Tremaine Edmonds, trading up to get him in the 2018 draft, who, I mean, he looks like a pterodactyl out there. He's so big and long. But otherwise, you're looking for an athletic skill set similar to Milano, and they did that, I think, at least in terms of body type in Bernard and Specter. We're never going to know until we see these guys on the field. Do they have the same instincts as Matt Milano? Do they run as fast as Matt Milano? Can they sniff out a screenplay as fast as Matt Milano? I think some of their college tape is encouraging in that regard. Both of them were extraordinarily productive. Bernard had 2 100-tackle seasons. I believe Specter had one, but highly decorated college guys. And I think they're going to be intriguing to watch as they kind of learn this defensive system in terms of how they're utilized. And they're both flexible because they can play both of those linebacker spots. Mm-hmm. So I found it interesting that they went double linebacker, which they hadn't done since the 2017 draft. So I'm interested to see how, just as I am all the guys on there, like, how are they going to use them? Like, where are they going to line them up?
Yeah.
All that stuff. I can't wait to see those guys out on the field here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, especially with where the roster is at right now. You know, you're already playing their numbers game as we are May 6th here, approaching rookie mini camp, OTAs, then training camp. You're trying to figure out, you know, be the mathematician. How is this person going to fit here? This person going to fit here? Final numbers, what is it going to look like? We have no idea because we are still a ways away from training camp. And we know some players always emerge from training camp who are some favorites that you wouldn't have labeled as a come up or somebody who really made a name for themselves in those couple of weeks there.
Let's get back to the OBL Friday fan mailbag to answer a few more questions before we run out of time today. James asks, opening night against the LA Rams, ? Thanksgiving against KC, thoughts? Go Bills. Yeah, everybody's excited because the schedule's coming out next week. And I think the Bills have a very good chance to be, you know, kickoff game the Thursday prior to the first Sunday of the regular season for two reasons. One, they're considered a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
Two, they play the defending Super Bowl champions on their regular season schedule. And Von Miller left L.A. to go play for Buffalo.
Storylines.
There are too many storylines. I think they are one of the favorites to be the kickoff game. Thanksgiving against KC, Maddie, though, I don't know if I want that much stress on a holiday.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Thanksgiving, I want to enjoy it a little bit. You know, just think more about food than, oh, my God, they got to play the Chiefs again on the road. And
They do play the Lions. Could they draw the Lions
Well, that's
for
right. That is another option because we know the Lions will be playing on Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. The question is whether or not the Bills will be the opponent of choice on that date. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. It is a triple header now on Thanksgiving, so they could be part of some other matchup. And then the other games will involve the Cowboys and the Lions, as we know. So we'll have to just wait and see. Alan says, over under, 3.5 primetime games for the Bills this season, question mark. I think it's a good over under, but I'm going with the over. I think they'll get four.
Over, yeah, four or five.
I don't know if they'll get five. I think they'll get four.
I'm saying five. Why not?
You're going five.
Why
okay.
not? We're going to have five primetime games. We should have five primetime games. Like, come on, man.
I'm trying to think of the teams that are sexy enough on the schedule.
The Bills.
To justify primetime. I would say Green Bay.
Okay.
On the Bills schedule. Green Bay, the Rams, the Chiefs, and then...
The Bengals.
Bengals, yes, because, you know, defending AFC champs. And then it's maybe the Ravens or Pittsburgh, I think.
Titans.
But I think you're pushing it a little bit.
Dolphins.
Because Pittsburgh could really struggle with a tenuous quarterback situation. So I think if they go five prime times, it's probably Baltimore. That would be my guess.
They could have.
But I think four is a pretty good bet. Yeah. So I would take the over if you can get an over-under on primetime games for the Bills at 3.5.
3.5, definitely over. Who knows if they'll have some of those flex games. They probably will worked into their schedule there with where, you know, this could be a Saturday or a Sunday 4 o'clock. Or, you know, we'll see when the time comes. They try and put some of those games there in the later part of the season when it comes to playoff time or determining who is going to be in the playoffs.
I think the one thing right before we go to break here that I'm interested to see, with Deshaun Watson now in Cleveland, the last season he played, he led the league in passing yards. Does the league feel as happy about Deshaun Watson going to the Browns as the front office of the Browns does? And I think the schedule will bear that out for us, whether they are or they are not, because he is a talented player, but there's an awful lot hanging over that guy with his pending litigation in civil courts. And I wonder if the NFL steps back from that and says,
"Yeah, on the side of caution."
You know, yeah, but because, hey, for all we know, there could be a suspension. Now you put the Browns in prime time, and there's no Deshaun Watson, who's probably the major
storyline. And the Browns are the Browns in prime time.
Very true. Very true. We will take a break here. We'll try to squeeze in a couple of more mailbag questions when we come back here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, so Scott in the mailbag asks, with the addition of O.J. Howard, do you see the Bills running more 12 personnel this year? Also, could you see the Bills running 20 or 21 personnel with Singletary and Cook? I think there is a chance they run more two tight end sets, but I don't think it's going to be like this sharp spike of an increase. I think it'll be marginal. We're talking like, because the Bills had one of the lowest rates of 12 personnel usage last year. Now, you do have a new coordinator. And you have a much more talented guy in O.J. Howard. So that might preclude you to add it a little bit more to the mix. But I don't think it's going to get to the point where it's like one of their top two personnel groupings.
And in this offense with 12 personnel, yes, you may use that a couple times to put Dawson and O.J. on the field because they're both pass-catching tight ends.
Red zone, maybe.
Yeah, but it's not like you're adding a tight end in Lee Smith, who is your blocking tight end when he's on the field. So it would make sense to run more 12. So, yeah, I see them adding it a little bit more. But, yeah, it's not going to shoot through the roof or anything.
I mean, I suppose if those two guys are killing it, then, yeah, you line up in 12, but it's not a traditional 12. It's kind of like a spread them out 12.
Yeah.
20 or 21 personnel? Absolutely. You put Singletary
you
and
bet.
Cook on the field, your options are limitless. Last one real quick. David, should Mayfield, when he's released, follow the Trubisky model, take a one-year low-wage deal and back up Josh? Step in, gets hurt. If not, you know, improve your game, get a fresh start. I don't know if he wants to go on hiatus.
Yeah.
I think the fire in his belly has got to be burning like an inferno. He wants to get on the field and prove people wrong, knowing the kind of person he is.
Doesn't fit Baker's personality at all.
No. So I would be very surprised if that happens. I got to believe he's hoping he gets released and he'll sign with Seattle for peanuts just so he can get back on the field. Matty, thanks for helping us out today. We will see you folks next Monday. We'll catch up with you at 1. Check out the Bills podcast, Bills by the Numbers, latest episodes out.